disease. That's how we've seen that spread. So I've seen some people erroneously call it a sexually transmitted infection. It's not, it's a skin infection. And one time you bring skin close to other skin is sex, but there's lots of other times that we do that.
Great, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I have a question. Thanks. A couple weeks ago, I knew a number of people who flew back home from vacations who ended up having a positive COVID test. And it seemed, you know, pretty darn prevalent that way. I'm curious if that is still true. I am traveling next week somewhat unexpectedly, and it doesn't seem like great timing, just with so many people I know bringing it back. You know, we'll absolutely be wearing a KN94 on the plane and, you know, take the usual precautions. But are we still hearing that that's a pretty major source of transmission? And any way of knowing if that's from the airplane versus, you know, just high prevalence of disease in other places that people are bringing back?
Hard to know. We definitely are seeing a lot of transmission related to travel. Certainly we know the plane is a high risk time, but often people travel to do other things. And so when we're investigating a case at the department, we'll talk through all their risk factors. The plane is one, but often when we fly out of state, we also go to.
Uh-oh. She froze. She freeze for you guys?
Yep.
Within, you know, 2 days of after they landed, which suggests they actually got it out of county before the plane ride, and then brought it back. So if you're traveling, I would say standard precautions apply, high quality mask in the airport and on the plane, wash your hands when you go through TSA. And then also think about when you get to your arrival destination. COVID-19 we're seeing very high rates throughout the country, particularly in the South. Actually, we're seeing a really significant rise in cases. And so I would not recommend, for instance, indoor dining. If you're really trying not to get COVID-19, outdoor dining, takeout, things like that. And then if you're meeting up with friends or going to a conference, assure that you keep your mask on there. The other place we're seeing is we'll see even masked conferences, but then they'll sit down for a meal and take their masks off. So think about those meal times. That's a really high risk time, and masking in your interactions in other places as well. But if you're outdoors, you can still primarily take your mask off.
And is the transmission, or excuse me, the incubation period changing at all, that time between exposure and testing positive or onset of symptoms?
We're seeing about 3 to 5 days on average for exposure to onset of symptoms, which is a little bit shorter than the original, but pretty stable for the Omicron variant.
Okay.
But if you have symptoms that started a day after your flight, you didn't get it on your flight. You got it where you went.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
No worry.
I see we have a number of KPTZ questions, but I do have one question. I started to kind of noodle on the fall and thinking about schools. How are we preparing for kids going back to school? I've been hanging out with a lot of kids lately, and some of the parents are starting to talk about, you know, the horizon.
So yes, looking at schools, there is a lot of pre-planning that goes into place. If you know any teachers, they're working right now on preparing for the fall, and the same is true for the public health department. I do think that our response in the schools will look a little different next year. We are truly at an endemic phase of the virus. And so what that means from our purposes is there's just tons of COVID-19 in the community. And some of the ways that we managed COVID-19 before don't make as much sense now. So a lot of our early focus was identifying cases and identifying exposures and trying to lock those down. But in truth, in our life now, we have multiple exposures often throughout our day. If you're going into indoor spaces, multiple different indoor spaces, you're likely getting exposed to COVID-19, which is why we emphasize those universal precautions, wearing a high quality mask in indoor settings, all of your indoor settings. And we have less emphasis on contact tracing because it doesn't matter as much. That's the case that I know about, but there's probably 4 other cases you got exposed to this week that I don't know about. So how that plays out in schools is that we're still going to recommend masking. We're unlikely to require it. We are going to make sure that schools still have access to testing that they can make available to their staff and their kids. So schools will still be a critical testing site for our community. but we are unlikely to do the level of contact tracing we did before, where we find out everyone that a kid has been around and notify those folks. Instead, what the schools will do is a general kind of dashboard, or they can send direct communications to family. One way or another, they need to let folks know when they have a positive on site, but we're not going to see the level of contact tracing anymore because there's so much in the community that the school is not going to be the primary source for where people are exposed. So if you're a family member who's worried about isolation and quarantine and contact tracing, that's good news. If you're a family member who is really worried about COVID, that might feel like concerning news. I would say the most important thing for protecting your kid from COVID-19 is having them wear a high quality mask in school. Not all kids are going to be willing to do it if not all their friends are. So it's important to start having that conversation with your kiddos now. Talk about family expectations, problem solve how to reduce their risk in a school setting. But high quality masks do still work well for the wearer. And so you can protect your kid that way in a school-based setting.
And it's interesting to me because we're high, our meter says high still. Mm-hmm. And CDC says that when it's high, everyone should wear a mask, but I'm seeing fewer and fewer people wear masks out in the community. And I don't know, just trying to model the behavior, but also just a little bit concerned. I don't know what to do about it. I'm sure you don't either, but yeah. It's hard to see so many people kind of jettisoning that basic protection for themselves and their fellow community members. And
yeah,
I felt frustrated this weekend.
It is hard. I do think there's a lot of fatigue and a general kind of desire to move on, which is very understandable. You know, this has been really long lasting. The challenge is the virus is still here. And it's in fact more here and more transmissible than it's ever been. I can understand why some folks might not be masking now if they have, for instance, recently had COVID in the last 30 days. That's not unreasonable. But remember that the COVID protection from a prior infection really does only last about 30 days. So masking in indoor spaces is still a good idea. Your vaccine does prevent severe disease very well, but there are other people around you who might be high risk. And so that's my biggest reason for masking in those spaces. I think I'm unlikely to get severe disease, but I don't know who's next to me who might. And so it's a simple thing I can do to protect my community.
And I just want to say out loud that I've heard of people who are vaxxed and boosted, 4 shots in, who are getting COVID and are down and out for 10 to 20 days. And I just can't imagine being down and out for 10 or 20 days. I don't want that to happen to me. So anyway, I just feel sensitive to the folks not taking the basic precautions, both for themselves and the community. And I just wanted to say that out loud. So
we would encourage it. And yeah. Even if you've been taking a break from masking, now's a great time to put one back on now that BA5 is really firmly in our community and we're seeing such high rates of transmission.
Mm-hmm. On to KPTZ questions.
So we have a couple, we have several good questions today. One was talking about return to work guidelines. So our current guidelines is that if you are up to date on your vaccines, so if you're vaccine boosted, if you've had 4 doses, if you're over 65, you can go ahead and return to work even if you've had an exposure to COVID-19. We do recommend if you have a known exposure to COVID-19 that you do mask during the next 10 days after that exposure and you test 5 days after that exposure, or certainly if you develop any symptoms. This person was asking about higher risk exposures. So say you have a household contact who has COVID-19. It is true you are much more likely to get a breakthrough infection from a household contact than you would from, you know, a random passerby in your day. So they were asking if there is any change in guidance or change in requirements for those folks. There is not a actual different guidance for that group. You can still go back to work if you are up to date. You do really need to mask for that 10 days if you have had a household contact who has COVID-19 because you are high risk for converting to positive in that setting. Luckily, the masks go a really long way at reducing transmission to other people in your workplace setting. And so that's why we say you can go back, is because it's not 100% you're going to get it. And if you wear a high quality mask for those 10 days while you're there, you are unlikely to spread it to others. Of course, if you develop symptoms, test right away and stay home. If those symptoms last more than 24 hours, test again, keep staying home. And you can really prevent transmission that way. Like we talked about before, if you're up to date on your vaccines, you are less likely to see that pre-symptomatic transmission. So staying home when you're sick is a key component of not transmitting to other people at work. If it is an option to reduce your workplace exposure, if you can work from home, that's always better. So for instance, when my daughter had COVID, I moved my meetings to virtual because I really didn't want to bring COVID into the public health department if I could prevent it. We just can't lose workforce there. And luckily, I am privileged enough to be able to work from home. So I did that. Not all of us have that option. And so masking in the workplace is your primary protection from transmission there and staying home when you're sick. If you work in a very high-risk setting where you can't work from home, you work in a hospital, you work in a long-term care facility, I would recommend if you have a household contact who's positive, adding another layer of protection like an antigen test on your way in to make sure that you're not bringing COVID into those very high-risk settings. Jails are another very high-risk setting that I'd recommend an antigen test if you have a household contact as well. That's not formal CDC guidance, but it is a good idea. And now that we have enough antigen tests, we have them at the public health department, we have them at the libraries, we have them at all the pharmacies. We really want to encourage you to use them for those kind of settings. The next person was asking about Novavax. So Novavax was a recently approved vaccine for COVID-19, and they just want to know a little bit more about it. So it's not quite in our community yet, but it soon will be, and we will carry it at the public health department. Novavax is so far a two-dose series, and it does use an older technology for vaccines. So it uses a little piece of the virus protein and that can't infect you with COVID-19. It doesn't use mRNA. It doesn't use a viral vector. It's kind of old school technology, but it works really well. It shows similar efficacy and safety to the other vaccines that we have available. But if you're one of those rare people who was allergic to one of those, Novavax could be a good option. If you didn't get vaccinated before because you were concerned about some of the technology, you were concerned about mRNA, you were concerned about the viral vector, Novavax could be a good option for you too. It's old school vaccine, same as many other vaccines that we use. So I would definitely encourage you to move forward with getting vaccinated with Novavax if you weren't comfortable with some of the others. We are seeing that you can get the kind of flu-like symptoms that you got after the other COVID-19 vaccines, but we are seeing it a little less commonly with Novavax. So that's one other option too. If the symptoms, the side effects made you concerned, Novavax could work for you. We have seen rare cases of myocarditis in the trials of the Novavax vaccine. Again, incredibly rare, much rarer than with COVID-19, and actually less than we've seen with the mRNA vaccines. So if the myocarditis was what kept you from the mRNA vaccines, Novavax might be a good option. A couple other questions. This next person asked a simple but important question. If you take a home test and it's negative, do I need to report it to Jefferson County Public Health? No, you do not. We only take positives at the online reporting tool. You may wonder, if you follow our numbers closely, then how can we get a percent positivity? We don't count home antigen tests, positive or negative, in our percent positivity. That's exclusively PCR results because we do get positives and negatives for those. This next person asked about what percentage of the new cases of COVID-19 are breakthrough cases, i.e. situations where a person who gets reinfected is fully vaxxed and boosted. Unfortunately, most of the data collected around breakthrough cases actually still doesn't include boosters. It's just looking at people who have had two doses, which we know is really not up to date on your vaccines, but that's all the data sets that we have available right now from the CDC and from the Washington Department of Health. The most meaningful number to look at there is your probability of contracting COVID-19. If you just look at percentage of cases, you're missing a denominator, which is how many of us are vaccinated or not. But if you look at your probability of contracting COVID-19, if you've had only two doses, not even up to date, you're still 40 to 50% less likely to contract COVID-19. That doesn't make it zero. We all know people who have gotten a breakthrough case of COVID-19. So I would not count on your vaccine for protecting you against mild disease, but it is very good at protecting against severe disease. And it does still reduce your chance of getting COVID-19. And all of that data, again, is only two doses. Boosters reduce that risk even further. Couple other questions. One person asked, they had a case of COVID-19 in June, and they were wondering about leaving isolation. They saw that the CDC says you can leave isolation after 10 days. And then apparently some recent experts, the White House advisor recommended getting 2 negative tests before leaving isolation. So this person's confused. So they want to know, did I do the wrong thing? Did I infect a lot of people? And I would say you did not. So current stable guidance is you can leave isolation after 10 days, as long as your symptoms are improving and you're afebrile for 24 hours. Generally by 10 days, the vast majority of us, our symptoms are improving, we can go ahead and leave isolation. There is a very rare possibility of transmitting COVID-19 after the 10-day threshold, but it's very rare. You are most contagious in those first 10 days. And where earlier in the pandemic, we were really finding each individual case and trying to make sure there was no chance that that person spread COVID-19 to another person. Now, really, a lot of our work is reducing risk. When there's so much COVID-19 in the community, staying home those additional 11, 12, 13, 14 days isn't actually helping the community that much. And it's very hard on you. So I would say 10 days is very reasonable. If you're at all concerned, you're taking home antigen tests and they're still positive at day 11, I'd say most likely that's not viable virus that you're shedding at that point. It's something your immune system has already fought. But if you're concerned, wear a high quality mask when you leave, and then you're very unlikely to give it to others beyond that point. If you are immunosuppressed, isolation is actually 20 days, which is a very long time. But that's because that group can't fight the infection as well, so they shed viable virus longer.
Can I ask one clarifying question on that really quickly? Yeah. You said as long as you're afebrile, you mean without a fever, correct?
Yes, thank you for catching me on my language. So afebrile, you don't have a fever anymore. If you had a fever at all, not all of us do. Most of the time, the fever actually resolves by about day 5. So you should be solidly without a fever after day 10. But if you do still have a fever, or if you have severe symptoms, if you're coughing really badly, if you don't feel well, you should stay home. That most commonly correlates with severe disease in the beginning. So we'll keep you home that long. And last question, this person asked me to respond to a reported marked increase in what they called a sudden adult death syndrome, or SADS. So this likely is in reference to, there has been some primarily conservative commentators that have shared this message that there's been a sudden increase in what's called, what they're terming sudden adult death syndrome. There actually is no such thing as sudden adult death syndrome. There is sudden infant death syndrome. That's a very real thing we take very seriously, very different causes. There is also something called sudden arrhythmic death syndrome, which is also a very real thing. That is a genetic condition primarily that's caused by people who are born with an arrhythmia that they don't diagnose. It's actually one of the most common causes of death of young athletes, and has been that way since long before COVID-19. So when you see those rare dramatic stories of like a basketball player who drops on the field and then dies, that's usually what that is. So it's a very serious condition. It merits medical attention and it merits epidemiologic attention, and it has that. So there is a long-time study coming out of University of Washington called the Just-in-Time Study, which is about screening kids to prevent sudden deaths due to arrhythmias. That is actually the primary reason why when your kids play sports, they have to get a sports physical. Most people think it's to check for hernias and things. It's actually to listen to your heart, so we can figure out whether or not you have that. So it is very serious. It does matter. It's also been continuously studied throughout the COVID-19 pandemic and throughout the vaccination campaign. And there has been no increase in sudden arrhythmic death in the world as a whole in the United States or in Washington state. We have been monitoring for it. It hasn't happened. And that's expected because it's genetic. So it's not affected by environmental issues. So not a real thing. We haven't seen a spike in sudden adult death. What we have seen is a dramatic rise in the number of Americans dying due to COVID-19. And that is entirely preventable by being up to date on your vaccines. So with that, I'm happy to take any other questions from our commissioners or pass it to Willie. Thank you.
Any more questions? Nope. Okay, I see hands up and on the attendee list. We do not take public questions or comments. You need to get those into us through KPTZ in advance of this meeting. So anyway, Willie, what do you have for us? We have heat coming. I'm imagining it's a heat report.
Yep. Yeah. Good morning, everyone. Nothing on the COVID front from the EOC, very fortunately, but wanted to talk about the incoming warm weather. And we do have a little bit of a heat wave coming in, specifically Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, although it'll remain moderately warm through next weekend. This is a more typical summer heat wave, a typical late July heat wave for us, nothing like the heat dome that we saw just last year. We will see temperatures up into the 80s, maybe up into the 90s down in South County. But one way that this will differ from the heat dome last year is that it will cool down at night. We will drop into the low 60s, maybe even the high 50s in some areas, which during the heat dome, one of the reasons they called it a heat dome was that the heat was trapped in. There wasn't adequate cooling overnight, which increased the risk for everyone in the community. So we will have an opportunity to cool down. That being said, there will be elevated temperatures, which will produce a moderate risk for some in our community. I do really recommend everyone obviously keep an eye on the weather forecast, but there is a tool from the National Weather Service called the Heat Risk Index that you can search out and keep an eye on. Currently, we've been in the yellow, the low level of the heat risk index for multiple days now. We will rise up into the orange, the moderate risk level over the course of the week. But fortunately, we won't touch the red or the purple high or extreme heat risk index levels over the course of this wave. So nothing particularly dangerous, but it will present moderate risk for those in our community. Really recommended that folks who are working outside limit your exertion if at all possible, eat light, stay hydrated, wear cool clothing, all that kind of fun stuff. For those that are indoors, definitely, but who might be at increased risk for heat-related illness, do your best to stay cool, stay in front of a fan. You can throw cold water or ice behind it to help blow cooling air at you. Wet a towel, place that on your head or the back of your neck to help cool off. And watch for the signs, anywhere you might be, watch for the signs of heat exhaustion, as well as potentially heat stroke. So with heat exhaustion, you'll see that fatigue. You'll see folks start to get really red, produce excessive amounts of sweat. And at a certain point, that can progress to heat stroke, which is a life-threatening illness. That's actually when your body starts to shut down because it can't adequately cool itself. You'll actually stop sweating at a certain point. And you'll see an altered state of consciousness from that individual. They won't be able to, you know, answer questions, might not know where they're at, things like that. And that is a life-threatening emergency, and you should call 911 in that situation. But ideally, folks don't get to that point, so do keep an eye out. Again, make sure you're taking breaks when working outside, staying hydrated, all that kind of fun stuff. Because this isn't an extreme heat event, we're not looking to our partners to increase hours of facilities or open up specific cooling related centers, but there are plenty of cooling options for you out there that can act as cooling center. We'll be putting out a press release a little bit later today. We'll have the information up on both the public health as well as the DEM websites, the community centers in the tri-areas, Quilcene and Brennan will be available, the Port Townsend Senior Center, as well as the libraries. And we'll be making sure they all have some water. A few of those buildings are air conditioned. Others will have fans, might be a little bit cooler than an apartment building or things like that that folks might be in. So certainly some options. But overall, thankfully, nothing like the heat dome, but some elevated heat will present risk over the course of the next couple of days. So folks, you know, watch out. Watch out, especially as you're recreating or working outdoors. If you have neighbors who you know might be particularly vulnerable, don't hesitate to check in on one another. That's what our NPREP neighborhood preparedness group is really built on, neighbors helping neighbors. So we'll just keep out an eye out for one another. Thankfully, this isn't too extreme, but that elevated risk gives us a little cause for concern. So we'll be watching it the next couple of days.
Thanks, Willie. And I also just wanted to put a pin in or put a save the date out for the All County Picnic. which is August 20th and 21st. I love the All County Picnic. So I Googled it up this weekend and thought I should say it out loud in our Monday meeting.
No, put it on thank you calendar. For that.
Yeah.
The All County Picnic, for those who don't know, it's an annual event. It's a partnership with between DEM, Local 2020's MPREP group, as well as the Production Alliance. And this is actually our 10th anniversary of the All County Picnic. But of course, during COVID, things, as everything else did, it looked a little bit different than what we're used to. It's an annual event, celebration of community resilience, preparedness. It's a chance for folks to come together to, you know, talk about what resilience means to us, to talk about how we can grow resilience by, you know, building relationships between neighbors, helping neighbors, as well as the general public and the first response community and other partners in disaster response. This year, on Saturday, August 20th, we will be having a series of presentations on various disaster-related topics. And folks can come and pick up one of the hallmarks of the All County Picnic, free corn on the cob. So you can come pick up corn on the cob, attend a presentation, get a little more information about how you can become more disaster prepared. And then on the 21st, that Sunday, the following day, we're encouraging our organized neighborhoods to, what we had this concept during the pandemic, calling it Picnic in Place. Or rather than a big gathering where we've had, you know, 1,000 people at H.J. Carroll Park in the past, have a smaller, you know, COVID-safe picnic just within your neighborhood. You can hang outdoors, you can space properly, be a little bit more safe that way. So we're encouraging folks to, you know, come and attend a presentation, grab their corn Saturday, then have a picnic within their neighborhood come Sunday. So if you don't know, if you live in a in prep neighborhood, if you want to get involved, if you want more information about the picnic, feel free to contact us. I'm here at DEM. We can fill you in. Otherwise, we'll be doing some more advertisement as the picnic draws closer, including what those presentations will be and how to sign up. So thank you for bringing that up, Commissioner, and we look forward to seeing folks there.
Thinking about my corn recipes already. Thank you, Willie. It's 10:28. So I think we'll close our COVID update for today and thank our colleagues for joining us. I find myself remarking often the consistency of our team coming together on Mondays at this time and how much the community has come to value and rely on that. So I really appreciate the two of you being here with us and look forward to seeing you next week.
Can I make one question for Willie?
Yeah.
It's a little tangential, but it looks like you took my recommendation to grow the hilly hoo, but I just want to make sure you know you need a clean chin, and then the mutton chops go to the mustache.
I'm working on it. It's not ready for prime time yet, okay. But thank you. I appreciate that.
Thanks.